Today on the AF Podcast, we break down the 15-year anniversary of the classic album debut of 50 Cent's Get Rich or Die Trying. I'm joined by Sean Adonis, past contributor to South Shore Ave, as we discuss the beginnings of 50's career pre-Get Rich, discuss the impact his debut album had on the music industry then and now, rank our top five songs off of the album, and then we dare compare it to the other classic hip-hop albums of the 21st century, as well as everything else in between. To listen to more podcasts, make sure you subscribe right here to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. And South Shore Ave is available wherever you listen to podcasts. You can listen and subscribe to the latest episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher under the name South Shore Ave. If you haven't subscribed yet, click the subscribe button on your podcast player right now, all right? And just before we start, I want to give a shout out to Rap Salute Program. They're on Mondays from 8 to 9 p.m. on iLive radio station, and you can catch them on iLive.com, all right? It's the AF Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio.
Welcome to the AF Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio.
Yes, sir. Before we begin, Sean, what you drinking?
I'm mixing it up today, man. Some brandy, and then I have some leftover Ciroc from the Super Bowl celebration. So, got some of that. I'm mixing up dark and white.
Okay.
So, mixing it up.
And keep your good tradition, you know, we always start the podcast with a drink, or at least we're sharing what we're drinking. And you're the only person I do this with. I usually don't have a drink with anybody podcast-wise. Like, I usually just, you know, just go into it. The most I have is a glass of water. I have the Brita thing beside me, but that's about it. But every time I'm like, all right, I got to keep tradition, man. We got to have a drink. So today, I'm actually drinking Stag. You know Stag?
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, because we got, because the LCBO, they finally brought it to Toronto. So it's not in every store, but some stores have it. So I still have, like, a leftover bottle left, so... I'm sharing it for the podcast. I'm sharing it with you and the listeners, man.
Nice. Okay. Hey, I'm glad to hear I'm such a positive influence on you, man.
Yeah. My liver doesn't thank you, but...
You only live once, man. Your liver has to take the sacrifice for your mental well-being.
Exactly. So it's a cause and effect of life, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly, man.
Oh, and before we even start this up, another thing too. I know you were talking about how you had your leftover drinks from the Super Bowl. I'm gonna make a prediction. I think we're recording this on Tuesday, February the 6th. I'm gonna say that during the Eagles parade, which I believe is gonna be on Thursday, this podcast will be out on Friday. I have this feeling like Meek Mill's going to come out. They're going to give Meek Mill a day pass so we can perform his Dreams and Nightmares song.
Well, for all intents and purposes, I think that'd be justified. But if it doesn't happen, I guarantee you that Kevin Hart's going to jump on the freaking float and try to Bogart somehow the mic or, you know, grab the Super Bowl trophy. He's going to do some nonsense because... I think he feels that he's the interim Meek Mill. While Meek is gone, he's taking out the lantern for Philly. So
I heard they said that there are gonna be some dramatic surprises. Some of the Philly officials were saying with regarding the parade. So I'm like, dramatic surprises. I'm like, yo, if it's not Meek Mill, I'm like, then what's the point then of even saying that? But his song is so affiliated with the team too.
Yeah, exactly. They ran out to that. Well, I gotta say, I mean, hey, if they pull that off and give him a day pass or whatever, Meek's officially the king of Philly.
Really? For real, though?
If that happens, man.
For real. That'll actually be amazing and sad because then he's going right back to jail.
Yeah, seriously. Go back to jail with a hangover.
That's, you know, horrible. What I mean? Well, speaking of which, so we're here to celebrate the 15-year anniversary of 50 Cent's Get Rich or Die Trying. Now, on quite a few occasions, I'm not even going to lie, man, you've been my plug for future talent. So in the past, you put me on to Lil Wayne right before his career went flying through the roof. You put me on to Drake before he dropped the So Far Gone mixtape. You were like, yo, I think Drake's going to be the next one. I'm like, the Degrassi guy? You're like, yo, trust me, I think this guy's going to be the next one. I'm like, okay. And actually, you even put me on to Future right when he was starting to bubble. Last but not least, when 50 Cent started dropping, you know, his mixtapes and stuff, you were the one that were like, yo, see? Listen, 50 Cent is the Future. What is it, the 50 Cent is Back mixtapes? Yo, this guy's the next one. I'm like, 50 Cent, really? The How to Rob guy? You're like, yo, trust me, Calvin. And this is years back. I think your prophecy prediction started from with 50 Cent.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, let's see. And then, you know, by the time I heard 50 Cent is the Future and all the mixtape songs and the tracks and the street tracks and everything else, I was like, yo, okay, you know what? I agree. This guy's on fire right now.
The sad thing about that, being a dude from Montreal, I made $0 A&R-ing any of those predictions. I predicted every wave within the past two friggin' generations, and I made $0 off it, which is horrible. But at least I got some recognition, so thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no doubt. We got to give credit where credit's due. And also, you know what? Shout out to Headley, because he's the one that... one of our past contributors to South Sharaf, he actually put this idea in my head. I remember I was in a chat group, one of our chat groups, and he hit me up like, yo, when are you going to be doing a write-up on this or going to be discussing this in the next pod or write-up or whatever? And he sent me the link for this. And I'm like, the first thing I said is, Jesus, it's been 15 years? God, I'm old. You know, that's the first thing I thought, literally. Like, I was just like, oh, my God. Like, where does the time go? That was 15 years ago? But then, you know, as I started thinking about it, I'm like, you know what? That actually isn't a bad topic, just because, too, that album was really fire. You know what I mean? Like, that album was, like, out of control fire. I think people forget just, like, the kind of seismic impact that album had.
They definitely do. I think so.
Oh, another thing I was going to say, too, is I think you're right. I think you really missed your calling as being an A&R guy. Like, you could have been the guy right now running, like, the Warner Brothers department for the A&R for a record label right now. You know what I mean? I think you missed out, Sean.
Yeah, man. So I think I came a generation too late, man, because now you have Drake, you have The Weeknd, you have Belly, you have all these Canadian acts that are right in my backyard, but they came when it was too late, you know what I mean? By this time, I'd done moved on from anything that could be potentially seen as being in that realm of business. But hey, man, whatever. at least you could pat me on my back and tell me that I have that talent.
Yeah, no, I give it to you, man. You're like, I always said, like, you're in the wrong business, though. Like, seriously speaking, because you call those guys out, even Fabulous. Even the Renaissance of Fabulous, because, I mean, Fabulous was always a guy that, like, you know, when he came around, his stuff was always nice, you know what I mean? Like, he had the club stuff especially, but, like, the mixtape Fabulous is somebody completely different from the regular album-making Fabulous, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
And you were like, yo, you got to hear these mixtapes Fabulous is putting out. I'm like, all right. I didn't even question it. I was just like, all right. By that time, I completely co-signed your A&Ring skills. So at that point, I was just like, let me just put it on. And like, anytime Fabulous puts on any type of content that is not put out by a record label, I am all over it.
Yeah, man. Like, honestly, Fab too, man. Like, when he dropped that, what was it called again? The funeral service.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he dropped that mixtape, that opened my eyes, man. Because, mind you, Fabulous was consistent throughout the years, but. And this is something I'll touch on in this topic here as far as mixtapes. But when he became Mixtape Fab, you know what I mean? Because before he was Single Fab, he was Rap and R&B Fab, you know what I mean?
Right.
He was, you know, the young, cutesy rapper rapping with the R&B chicks Fab. But when he rolled up his sleeves and became Mixtape Fab, I'm going to stuff bars down your throat, pause, Fab. Like, that's when dude really showed, and it was a prequel to what ended up now this year becoming, you know, the Freddy versus Jason, where he could hang bar for bar with Jadakiss.
With Jadakiss, yeah.
Like, Fab got bars, man. Fab got bars, like, it's ridiculous. But anyway, let's stick to the topic at hand, or else we'll be here for the entire day.
Well, I mean,
all that to say, I co-sign your praise of me, Calvin. I agree. I'm really great at picking out great music.
Yeah, wait.
I co-sign that.
I love the humbleness, man. That's shit is fire.
Hey, I am amazing. Who am I to argue with you telling me how great I am, Calvin? You're pretty. I've always given you credit with, you know, how sharp you are with these kind of things. So
it's funny, man. When I think back of 50, man, like, even before the whole phenomenon of 50, like, I remember I was in New York when he first dropped that How to Rob song. And I remember, like, the hysteria it caused during that period in time because, I mean, nobody ever came out with something. The only person that came out with something like that where he's calling people out was Biggie's, remember the Dream song? Where he was talking about all the R&B singers you want to tag?
Yeah.
But this was different. Like, he was talking about all the rappers and R&B singers that he wants to rob and how he's going to rob them. It was kind of smart because it put his name on the map. Like, they always say, like, even negative press, bad press is good press, especially when you're starting from the bottom. You're just trying to get on. You're just trying to get your name heard. So, yeah. I mean, just hearing that 50, you're like, yo, I mean, it's funny. I like the song. I remember, like, the hysteria it caused. I remember a lot of people wanted to come after him, like Wu-Tang and all these people wanted to punch him in his face and all this stuff. when he dropped that record, but like it put him on the map a little bit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and the funny thing is, I never really liked that song all that much.
Mm.
I mean, it was, like you said, it was a song that got him attention, and it got him, and I didn't dislike the song, but I mean, it got attention, and I gave it burn just because no one did that shit.
No
one just dissed everyone. Dude's like, who's hot? I'm dissing everybody.
Yep.
Told Timberland, you give me the loot. Missy, you put the hot dog down. You know, who does that? You know? So for that reason, I gave it attention and I gave it ratings. And I appreciated the song. But the song itself wasn't his best work. I didn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
But you just loved the idea and the nerve just to take shots at everybody. Dude really just sniped at everyone.
Yeah, no question. And I mean, you look back on his career now and it's like, it's, you know, it's a precursor to like the mentality of 50. Like, this, because I think one of the things that gets underrated for him is his intellect. He's really smart.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Cause very calculated.
Yeah, because for something like that, you got it's smart and calculated. It made sense. I remember hearing the story of 50, of I think Hov was telling the story about how when that song came out and then, you know, remember he had a, I think it was the Volume 3 album. He had, I forgot what the song was called, but he had the track where he was like, I'm about a dollar. What the fuck is 50 Cent? And then when he said he ran into 50 at some concert a few months later, thinking like, okay, like, what are you going to do? Like, kind of like, you know, like, you know, is he going to like air me out or say whatever? And the first thing 50 told him was, yo, thank you. And he said he was just, I remember it. He said he kind of paused and he was just like, okay, wow, this guy's smart. The average person might have been like, oh yeah, well, you know, and try to front on him and all that stuff. But he was just like, yo, like, thank you. You put my name on the map. And he's at that time was like the biggest artist. You know what I mean?
I heard
like,
that too.
You know, so it's like, so you look at it, you look at that, like even looking back at that, you're like, yeah, like it showed you the intellect of what you're about to deal with coming down the line. And of course, we don't have to rehash the whole thing of him getting shot up and all that stuff. But we know all that. But at the time that he came back out, like when he came back to the masses, it's interesting to see just how much it mushroomed, man.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you what, there's very few artists that had that kind of buzz come out before their first album. The only ones I can think of off the top of my head, because we're doing this, this is kind of like the off the cuff podcast here today. I would say Drake was probably one, and I mean, that was way after, but I would say Drake was one before, you know, by the time he put out the So Far Gone mixtape, you know, that shit was like, it took off, you know, it made him,
true.
He was like a worldwide star before this first album even came out.
That is true.
You know what I mean? A thank me later, whatever. So, like that's one I can think of. And the other name, which I know you appreciate here, you remember the bus Cannabis had?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. That was a roller coaster ride because it was the biggest buzz to the biggest letdown. Like, Cannabis, you can't have a higher projected summit for your career than to catapult the way he did with his album. My gosh, that must have been emotionally scarred. Cannabis, he's never seemed really too tightly wound after that. And I could really say, I could understand that, man. Cannabis, man, that must have taken a mental toll to be so hyped to be the next thing and have your album be so garbage and then just like completely
just forgotten.
Put out a dud.
And the scary thing is, Sean, he was so hyped up that even with that album like tanking hard, this guy still went gold.
He went gold, man?
I believe he still went gold after that, which is crazy. That's to tell you how much people probably bought that on the spot. And then when they opened up the packaging and they're like, wait a minute, is this like the demo?
Like, wait a sec, this hurt. This is awful.
But you look back on it, and I remember those days with Cannabis, man. Like, Cannabis had like a crazy buzz. He was on everybody's remixes and tracks and features. Plus, like, you know, like the mixtapes and his own singles and stuff. And I mean, when you look back at somebody like Cannabis, Sean, like, the guy was like, it wasn't just the fact that he was so popular. The guy was, it seemed like everything he touched was fire. Everything he spat was fire. Like, and then he beefed with LL Cool J, who, you know, at that time, which was such a major deal. And I don't care what anybody says, he smashed LL with that, you know, second round knockout. Yeah.
He destroyed him.
It was ridiculous. So by that time, you're like, man, like, all it was a question of, okay, who's producing this album? Like, because at that time, he had his pick. He could have had anybody produce his album. You know
and
what I mean?
Who did he choose?
Wyclef Jean.
Oh, man.
You know,
and then he dissed Wyclef. And then I remember Clef came out with that song, What's Clef Got to Do with It? Oh, man. some chapters of music are better left forgotten. Let's move on to Cannabis. Yo, I tell you what. To touch on your point, 50 Cent and his pre-album activity with the mixtapes and everything, I'm declaring today that changed hip-hop as we know it. Because think about this. 50 Cent, when he came out with his 50 Cent is the Future and 50 Cent, you know, all of his mixtapes that he came out with, and those mixtapes and the mixtapes were a format we'd never seen before, right? The mixtapes were him rapping on other people's beats. Mm-hmm. People didn't do that back in the day. That wasn't done, right?
And really, truly, a mixtape at that time was really a DJ putting together a collection of songs and showing off his skills. That was a mixtape. A mixtape wasn't somebody coming on and rapping. Like, a mixtape was, like, you actually took the songs, you mixed it together, you showed off your skills. The ones who were really talented were the most popular ones, or the ones that got the special features, like the you know, the DJ Clues and the Kid Capris and all those guys. Like that's where it was at.
Exactly. So what did 50 Cent do? 50 Cent, he had a situation where he wasn't able to get his music out like he wanted to. He was stuck in a deal he didn't like, blah, blah, blah. So what happened? Dude said, you know what? I'm going to drop mixtapes and do rap on other people's beats. Dude, and not only did he rap on other people's beats, he remade songs and made them sound better than the original.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny, this generation, it's like they have that what have you done for me lately mentality,
right,
under any circumstance. 50 Cent can categorically say he invented the mixtape as we know it. Because if you think about it, after he started dropping those, everybody and their mother, including myself and Randall, decided, hey, I could remake songs too. Because it was a format that no one ever thought about doing and a formula nobody ever thought about using. But hey, it worked great for 50. Let's try it. So everybody did it. Everybody that started the phenomenon to, one, rapping on people's beats, two, redoing songs, right?
Yeah.
And three, just coming out with a mixtape. After that, it evolved to being to the point where top artists would drop mixtapes. Before 50 Cent, that was seen as a throwaway. No one threw away music. Why are you throwing away music that you're not putting out under a label?
Yeah.
And getting paid for. You don't throw away music for promotion. But 50 Cent started that, man. That completely revamped hip-hop music as we know it. And we still see the effects of that today.
No, obviously. And then think about it. One of the biggest guys in the 2000s that blew up off that format was Lil Wayne.
Yeah, exactly. But mind you, Lil Wayne was a bit different because he already had music out.
True,
under the Hot
true.
Boys and stuff.
True.
But like you said, then he dropped Dedication 2. What did he have?
No Ceilings and stuff.
No Ceilings. He had another one too. A few different mixtape, a few different mixtape catalogs. But man, like you said, he dropped crazy mixtapes. Even then, him and Juelz dropped that Face Off one. Like, they dropped crazy mixtapes. And like you said, Lil Wayne, prior to dropping Carter 4, on mixtapes and features alone, that catapulted his career.
Yeah. Because think about it. Like, even somebody like him, and, you know, he wasn't a new artist, as you said. Like, he already had his own career with the Hot Boys and with Cash Money and all that stuff. And, you know, he had his couple singles and his couple albums and stuff. So he was already a known name, but nobody was respecting him on the level of as being one of the best rappers until he started doing this whole mixtape format.
Exactly.
Like by the time he went on into a Tupac mode of doing work, by the time he did all that, by the time like the Carter 3 came out, this guy was on top of the world.
Yep.
And it came directly from this format. You're absolutely right. Lil Wayne's career just... it went a whole other level just from this mixtape format, you know. And with the way 50 did it, though, honestly, when you look back on it, it was kind of needed. You know what I mean? Like the game was at a different place at that time. Because you think around like 2002, like at 2002, think about it. Like Ja Rule was the biggest star.
Yeah.
That Hov and Nas, that epic beef, one of the best rap beefs and rap battles ever. Like that kind of subsided a little bit by then. So, I mean, those guys were, you know, Nas got his name back and, you know, Hov was, you know, we took the loss after the Ether thing and, you know, so that kind of like subsided a little bit, you know, but most people were kind of following Ja Rule's method of work because it was working. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like Nelly was popular. Nelly was really popular. I remember when Fat Joe came out. Remember Fat Joe had the, you know, the song with Ashanti and Ja Rule and... you know, what's love got to do anything.
Yeah,
and, you know,
man.
Like, so it's like the whole game was kind of trending in that mode. You know, so when he came, it was like, I don't know. I feel like hip hop, especially back in those times, it's like it always goes through a period and then the cycle kind of changes a bit. Either an artist or an event or something happens where it kind of changes the game a little bit. And then everybody will rock with that mode for a few years and then it comes back in another direction. So I feel like that was similar to like maybe like the 4 or 5 years before that, when after Biggie died and Tupac died and, you know, Hov wasn't popular yet. And the game was kind of in a lull. And then it was, well, actually, I shouldn't say it was a lull. It was Bad Boy out. It was very glitzy. And you know what I mean? Like shiny suit, the whole shiny suit era was popping. And then DMX came and just completely changed the game. It made Jay-Z go from doing the fisheye lens, shiny suit stuff to making Hard Knock Life. You know what I mean? Like he allowed people to go back to being what they wanted to be. You know what I mean? And not chasing whatever was hot at the time. And I think 50 Cent kind of did the same thing. I think 50 Cent, in a way, kind of not just changed the mixtape game. Like, he kind of changed the energy back to, like, the hardness. You know what I mean? Like the game was kind of missing that. It was getting pretty again. And it's like he came and kind of just balanced out that energy.
I agree 100%, man. Like, 50 came and 180 the whole game. Because... like Ja Rule and Murder Inc., they had the winning formula at that time. They had they mapped out what was the blueprint for that era, and that was the lovey hip hop songs. Ja Rule was winning. When you look back at it, and you look back at what 50 pulled off, even before this album, because Get Rich or Die Trying was the culmination of everything he had put together, everything he had brewing prior to that.
Right.
By the time he dropped that album, even if it was a mediocre album, it would have sold decent just because of everything he had built up prior to that point.
Mm-hmm.
But when he ended up coming out and the album was dope on top of that, and then he sprinkled in a Ja Rule diss, which is what he basically built his empire on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, forget it, man. Like, that was a nail in the coffin to Ja Rule. That was like, I don't know if you watched The Walking Dead, that was like the freaking knife right through the skull of a zombie right
yeah.
there. That put him to sleep. That put Murder, Inc. to sleep. The
really
whole crew
did.
To sleep.
It really you know? Did.
And the thing is, to backtrack a bit as far as, you know, his rise to that point prior to the album, when you think about the fact, again, I don't want to reiterate this too much, but when you think about the creativity / insanity it took to think, I'm going to rap and make, oh, I'm going to do cover songs of rap artists. I'm going to cover their songs and switch the lyrics up.
Mm-hmm.
Who the hell thought that would have worked? One. And then two, who the hell thought it would have worked and we would like his cover better than the original?
Than the original, yeah.
But that worked out. And then he aligned himself with Lloyd Banks, who still will be on most people's top 10 lyricists of all time,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Tony Yayo, who is just character and swag. It was a perfect mix. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he came, he brought his own team, he brought his own... This old G-U-Net,
mm-hmm.
you know, like
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
no one did that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, afterward, you have different people doing the different calls like that for their crews, but prior to that, no one did that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Even to the point, my son is 16. So like you said, this is 15 years back. This album. So by the time the album came, he was a kid. He used to go G-U-Net like at a year and a half. You know what I mean? He even caught the bug.
Yo, but you know what I mean? But no, you're absolutely right. But honestly, like it's almost like you think about it. Like he came he came back to us prepackaged.
Yeah.
Like he came back. Like it was such a smart, like the way he put it, the way he kind of put his life together and his career together for us to notice him again was honestly genius. It was smart. Like
yeah,
he did all that stuff. Plus for the ladies, this guy came back looking like a superhero.
Yeah, exactly.
On top of everything else, he came back looking like a superhero. I knew a lot of women, man, back in the day that just, it made their day when this guy took his vest off, his bulletproof vest off.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
Like a friggin' rap Chippendale.
Yeah, it was, you know what I mean? So it's like he did all that and then, you know, and then he started out Ja Ruling songs and making it harder and hotter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? While ripping them at the same time. And it's funny. I always heard like the biggest mistake that Murder, Inc. did is that they took the bait. They should have never responded to him. They should have just continued making the stuff. But trying to like go shot for shot with him and acknowledging his presence, it kind of just, it's like it made his career go further.
Yeah.
And I mean, so it's like Murder, Inc. was on top of the game. They had Def Jam behind him. And then all of a sudden, this guy clicks up with two of the biggest entities in, if you could say music if you want to, with Eminem and Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine and Interscope, and all of a sudden now it's a level playing field now. This isn't just some street mixtape rapper that we used to mess with or we allegedly beat up, you know, a few years back. And this guy's looking at you eye to eye literally now.
Because they validated him.
Mm-hmm.
They gave him that validation. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You have the biggest artist in Eminem. He ranks with any big artist. He ranks with Jay. He ranks with anybody. And then you have Dre, who's an icon. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So his linking up with them was Murder, Inc.'s worst nightmare. Worst nightmare.
And you think about it, Sean. Like, I mean, not to say he wasn't validated already, but once he got with Dr. Dre and Eminem, man, like, you think back, man, like that. I remember thinking at that moment, you're like, holy shit, what is this guy going to do now? Because now you got the greatest producer of, you know, one of the greatest producers of all time, if not the greatest producer of all time. And just their whole marketing, promotional, financial backing behind them. So it's like, what is this guy going to do? Even if Dr. Dre produced every song, like, you knew, like, the way they were going to be coming with the heat for this guy, like it was gonna be a monster. You basically didn't know what to expect. You had no idea what to expect, but you knew whatever it was gonna be major.
But to be honest with you though, I guess, like, you know how you see either a movie or something and you're like, how much better can this actually get? You know? Like, I remember when, you know, I heard 50 Cent is the future and all the different 50 Cent mixtapes, and he had so many mixtapes. He put out so much music prior to his first album, but not a lot of it was original music, right? Mm-hmm. And even beats that I hadn't heard before been recycled, I loved them. I digged it because I liked 50 Cent. Mm-hmm. But I didn't think it had necessarily the commercial appeal that the album Get Rich or Die Trying would later have. I didn't know he had that in him.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anybody really figured that. Because, you know, like, you're used to, like you said, who else had that much hype generated prior to an album? Like you said, you had Cannabis. I can't think of anybody else. I mean, yeah, Eminem didn't maybe even have that much hype generated before his album.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, so I had expected, okay, he's going to blow. I like him. But I did not expect the quality that came out of that first album and the consistency that came out of that first album track for track. I did not expect that.
No, it was awesome because I was in college back then. That album stayed on my Discman because we used to rock the Discman back then. But that stayed in my my player. It stayed in my earphones like all the time. Outside of, and we're gonna talk about these albums later, but outside of like the Blueprint and Stillmatic and albums like that, this was like the next one that you had to get. It almost made you want to feel like if you didn't get this album, you felt like you're missing out on the movement. You know those albums that are so big, it's like you got to get it so you want to be a part of it, like especially back then. Like it was one of those where it's like you couldn't, like you'd be looking like, you know, you'd be looking like a real asshole if you missed out on catching this album, you know. And exactly. then when you heard it from top to bottom, you're just like, yo, like it's over, like it's a wrap. It's a wrap. And then on top of it too, like I'll ask you this question. How much do you think 50 Cent influenced, I hate to give him credit for this, but because I know other artists obviously had a major contribution on the South, but due to his flow and the way that he sound, because of the way, you know, obviously because some of the gunshots he took, one in his mouth, one in his face, you know, and it kind of slurred some of his speech and stuff. How much do you think his style kind of like had an influence on the South?
Okay. I don't know if I'll ride with that one because I see what you're saying, but...
And I'm not saying all of the South, of course, but I'm just saying that, like certain elements of it.
I think that he took, and again, I'm not a plastic surgeon or, you know, anything of that nature, but I mean, I remember even on one of his songs, he said something like, you know, prior to his album, he said something like, it said, do you straight up love him? New York, again, sound like I'm straight up Southern. So he bit their swag.
Yeah, that's true too.
So I can't say he influenced them, but to that same topic, he did bring that swag, that Southern twang. And now you're reminding me, now you're bringing me way back. And that's one thing that made him so appealing to people, because he would flow. He was from New York and he had that Southern flow, but it wasn't a straight up Southern flow. It was a hybrid. You know what I mean? Like a hybrid New York Southern type of thing.
A lot of it had to do is because, you know, he took the bullets to his face. So it's like certain words he'd have to drag and slur. Like it just, but the thing is that he made it work.
Yeah, he definitely did. He definitely did. And, yeah, like you said, other New York rappers weren't doing any type of Southern twang to their raps. They weren't doing that at all, man.
Yeah.
At all, man. Like, yo, dude, again, you talk about trailblazers. 50 Cent doesn't get enough credit for the trails he blazed, not only in hip-hop, but New York, period. So much of what goes on now has 50 Cent stamp on it, but people don't give him credit for it, man.
Yeah, I mean, another for better or for worse, I would say, because some of it was very influential and trailblazing, and then some of it was dividing because he did divide, you know, he did divide the New York rap scene a little bit too, you know what I mean?
Yep.
With anybody who, you know, who basically chose sides between him and Ja Rule was like his enemy, and it, you know, like it, all that stuff went down, and it kind of changed the way, things sounded in New York for a while too. You know what I mean? Like, cause he became like the gatekeeper. He had that Hove level where it was like, if he wasn't messing with you, you know, the radio stations weren't messing with you either.
It's true. And he was that first guy to call attention to numbers. How much was sold the first week and how much was sold. People didn't care about that back until 50 Cent really started bringing it on the forefront. They're like, wait a minute, how much did he sell the first week? Then you really started paying attention to things that people that just appreciated music didn't focus on.
Yeah, and now that became a source of focus.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
An album would be dope. You'd be like, but he only moved 100,000 units in the first week.
And then it's
how
like,
dope could it be?
Yeah, exactly. He didn't take it serious. And it's like, yo, like a few, maybe like a year or 2 years ago, you're like, oh man, he sold 100,000. Look, he's probably closer to gold. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Or you didn't even care. I didn't even care what anybody sold when I listened to music back then until 50 Cent put the spotlight on it. Like, okay, I guess I got to pay attention to this now. And I guess you're right, 50. He didn't sell enough units, so I guess it's garbage. You know what I mean?
And you know what? And you think about it. It was such a source of focus for him that because we had the podcast celebrating the 10-year anniversary between the Kanye and 50 Cent album battle back in 2007. We had that earlier this summer. Sorry, last summer. And part of the source of his argument or the source of like the confidence that he had at that time, he was basically like, "Yo, listen, if Kanye sells more records than me, I'm gonna retire." You know what I mean? Like, it was such a source of importance. Like, I mean, they had an album battle sale. Like, you know, something that we never saw before, but that was, like, at the apex of, like, caring about your numbers.
Yeah, it's true.
Kanye was the winner, but it's, like, and it's so funny because Kanye was the winner, and it's, like, nobody even messed with the Curtis album anymore. But meanwhile, I remember we and you were talking about this when we were, like, prepping for the that podcast, and I remember I'm like, yo, this album wasn't that bad.
Exactly.
But it's like, Sean, I honestly, outside of I Get Money, I never took the album serious because once Kanye won, I was just like, whatever. You lost. Whatever. Your career's over. Curtis sucks.
It backfired on him.
Yeah.
He created a monster that ended up backfiring and devouring him because we all had that same mentality, and he started that mentality.
Yeah, he did. And then the other part of it, too, was, you know, on the negative side of it, too, was a lot of it, like the back, you know, sorry, let me phrase that. Jeez. A lot of editing today. No, but you know what? Looking back on it now, like, again, like, the negative part of that, too, was how he used to focus. Remember how he used to rip smaller, like, independent labels and stuff? Because I remember part of the beef he used to have with the Game and stuff back then was because, you know, don't mess with Jim Jones and them. They're on Koch. They're on small label, da-da-da-da-da. You know what I mean? And it's like, if you're on an independent, you know, like you're a nothing, like you're a loser. And now
it's true. You're
and now putting out your own stuff and being independent is probably the smartest thing to do.
Yeah, you're right.
You're keeping all the money to yourself.
Yeah, like he definitely, to his credit, as much as he innovated and influenced the game, 50 Cent caused a lot of division and brought in a destructive mentality. Like you said, oh, they're on Koch. Like, man, who paid attention to that before that? It was all about how good is your music, man.
Yeah, we didn't care. Like, I remember, I mean, Duck Down, Black Moon, they're like on Payday Records at Duck Down. Nobody cared. As long as the music was hot and it was dope, that's all we cared about.
Yeah.
We literally cared about nothing else.
And then now, like, that's continued to catapult and catapult and catapult and, like, just, like, grow like a gremlin to the point where it became the ugly monster of that, where it was like, if you're tough and you're a thug, all of a sudden, you're a rapper.
Yeah, and that too.
And you can't question his music, because if you do, you're a hater. And realistically speaking, he's a G, he's a gangster, so who are you to question his music?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's so true. It's so true. But like I said, man, Get Rich or Die Trying was basically, I would say it's probably one of the landmark hip-hop albums of this century. I mean, nobody can disagree with that. And even though Dr. Dre and Eminem were his bosses, like, he was basically the biggest star in hip-hop for about a 3 to 4 year run, for sure.
Yeah.
As well as G-Unit. Like, they were the clique. They were the crew. You know what I mean? Everything they put out was hot for a few years, and it was all, you know, all due to basically what this, how this guy planned out his life back in like 2001, 2002.
Yeah.
You know, they're living off that to this day.
I'll definitely agree with that, man. Like, I'll tell you, like, the intro to that album, even though I think it was an extra on the album, which was Wankster, I was never the biggest Wankster fan. The song was cool, but that to me, it didn't give any window into the type of music you would later hear from Get Rich or Die Trying.
Right.
But I was like, yeah, Wankster's okay. But when he dropped in the club, it was over from that point on.
Well, you know what? Perfect segue. We'll lead into this next segment right now, which is we're going to pick our top five albums, rank our top five. Sorry, let me rephrase that. We're going to rank our top five songs from this album, going from the fifth spot all the way to number one. Now, me and Sean both, we didn't consult each other on this list, so we're both going into this blind. He's got his list, I got mine, but I want to rank our top five songs because, and I'll be honest, man, for me personally, I can only speak for myself here, it was hard to put this list together, man. There was a lot of dope songs on this album. That, like honestly, the songs I'm leaving out could have easily been in this top five. You know what I mean? It's just these are probably like my five favorite and five probably most important songs on this album. But really and truly, man, there was a lot of tracks on this album, man. That honestly got left on the cutting room floor, at least in terms of this list. You know what? So let's start at number five. Before that, I'm doing like a top five and a six, man. So my honorable mention track. I'm gonna go with Heat. For me, that was my honorable mention. That's my guilty pleasure. Let's face it, the politically correct, the PC era that we live in, this song will definitely get ripped to shreds. You know, I mean, it's basically the beat is basically gunshots. You know what I mean? Like it's a machine gun. You know what I mean? For all intents and purposes, like, you know, this is not a song that we technically shouldn't be liking, but I mean, this is like, it's my guilty pleasure. It was my guilt. Like, I love that song then, and I even listening to back into it now, I'm like, yeah, this song is just, it's so wrong, but it's so right.
Yeah, I dug that. I dug the beat, especially for that song. You want to go through yours first and I go through mine, or what?
Well, we'll just go we'll just go from top. I'm not going to risk list. We'll listen together. So we'll choose our top five, like our five or four or three or two. Number five, I had. Actually, I'll start with you. What did you have for your at number five?
All right. So first, my honorable mention, I'll give to Many Men.
Mm.
I dug Many Men, but it wasn't my favorite. So that'll be my honorable mention at number six.
Okay. I had that in my top five, actually. I won't say where, but I had that in my top five. I can't, and mind you, I'm not going to argue with your list. Well, I might a little, but I can't really argue too tough with it because, again, there's so many songs, but go on.
Number five, I'm going to give to PIMP.
Okay.
Because I dug it. I like the song more so for its commercial appeal. I didn't usually bang it when I was by myself. But when I heard it, I'm like, I could appreciate that's a dope song. And the beat was dope. I liked the beat, especially. Yeah,
the beat was hot. This was another one that was probably honorable mention. It was actually tied with Heat, was PIMP. The West Indian, the Caribbean in me obviously loves this beat because it's the steel pans. Like, you know, that's like music to any West Indians here, especially in hip hop. So that alone, I rock with it. I like the song, but I think it was one of those where the production was doper for me than the song itself. So it didn't make my list for that reason, but I did like the song, and I especially like the video. And I don't know if anybody remembers, but I kind of like at least the behind the scenes photo shoots of this video. If I don't know if you remember.
I kind of remember that.
Yeah.
Remember them thing there.
Yeah. But honestly, that's the only thing I will say. That's my only knock I would say. It's not not that the song sucks. I love the song, but like I said again, I think the production was better for me than like at least it hit me more than the actual song did.
Yeah, I can see that.
All right, so at number five for me, mine was If I Can't.
I gotta say, man, I never liked that song.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
See, this is why we're gonna have some problems with this list.
yeah, I don't know. To me, I don't know. The beat was all right. Mm. I just never liked that song, man. There's nothing really to elaborate on with that.
Well, you know what? Believe it or not, this song was I actually read the song was a. It was in a toss-up between this or In the Club to put out as his first single.
Jeez, that's crazy. I'm glad he chose In the Club or we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Yeah, I think about it. Listen, I loved, it's funny. I feel different about the production. I absolutely love the production, even to this day. It's like a club track to me. Like, you hear this in a club, it just goes hard. Like, this, I love it. I love the song. But, yeah, if this song was his first single, I don't know if it has the same international impact that that In the Club has. It doesn't have the same impact. It just doesn't. But with that said, like, the song probably still would have did really well, but I don't know if his career mushrooms the way that it does If I Can't, you know what I mean? Like, and I don't even know what kind of video you would come out for this song as well, but it's not gonna have the same impact all the way around, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
But this is another one where the production more got me than the production got me a little bit more than the song, but I still like the song. I thought 50 Cent, like, he rode the beat nice on this record, personally.
Yeah, I guess.
All right, so number four, I got Patiently Waiting.
Oh, Colin, that's blasphemy. You son of a gun. Okay. we'll see. But I got to say, I think four isn't high enough for Patiently Waiting.
Okay. Well, you know what, though? I will say this. This is 50 Cent. I mean, 50 Cent was never known as a lyricist, right? Like, his thing was basically more bravado, charisma, personality, and then, like, the rapping. You know what I mean? Like, the rapping was probably, like, third or fourth. And it's not a knock on his rapping, but he's just not, you know, you don't put him in the Hove and, you know, and Nas and Big Pun. That, you know, you don't put him in that kind of category. Black Thought. You don't put him in that category like that. But with that said, this lyrically, this was his best track to me, especially the first verse. What do you say? He goes, God's a seamstress that tailor fitted my pain. I got scriptures in my brain. I can spit at your dame. I was like, yeah.
Straight out,
like,
the good book. Look, brothers are shook. 50 Cent, no man, warrior. Something swing swords like Conan or something like that. Oh, man, 50, he bodied that. Yeah.
He embodied.
I think he got possessed. He got possessed by the competition, the level of competition, having to spit against M. Because he brought it. He brought his A game that time. Man.
Oh, no, 100%. Eminem does his thing on the track, too. But 50 Cent, if you had to choose the winner, 50 Cent wins on this.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah, 50 Cent absolutely wins on this. Like, he's just the charisma and everything else already beats Eminem on this track, but then the way he spits the first verse, like that whole first verse is fire.
Yeah,
you know, it's you know, like what are the sources to call it, a hip hop quotable? Like, that was a hip hop quotable.
Even the last verse, what did he say? In the glass house, and if you got a glass jaw, you better watch your mouth, cause I'll break your face. 50 bodied that song, man.
Yeah, it was, and that part is like, it's something simple, but it's like, it just, it's effective, you know what I mean?
Yep, because I'll break your face. Yeah, man.
What was number four for you?
For me, I have to give that to Back Down. I say. I mean, he went straight for Ja Rule's head again. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But
that beat, man, I like the beat, I like the hook, and he had to throw that Ja Rule diss in there, man.
Yeah.
That song was dope to me. I gotta give that number four.
Yeah, he bodied Murder Inc. on that whole song.
I don't wanna keep on rehashing this, but when you think of the highlights or what he accomplished, like I said, not even just like we both agreed, he completely mapped out, or he completely set the bar in so many different areas and open up so many different genres of hip hop based on his own creativity. But he completely capsized the Titanic, which was Murder, Inc.
Yeah.
Like, there was nothing stopping them. Ja Rule couldn't do anything. Yo, Ja Rule had songs with J-Lo. J-Lo would check for Murder, Inc.
Yeah.
Oh, to
yeah.
give her hits. Ja Rule had two hits with J-Lo.
To give her credibility.
Yeah. Two hits. He breathed J-Lo life. He breathed life into J-Lo. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Ashanti. Ja would, him and his raspy ass voice would be singing it and people would be shucking and jiving to it. They loved it. I didn't even like Ja Rule. I'm like, man, this guy could put out good music.
Mm-hmm.
I was, from the first time I heard him, I thought he was a DMX clone. But
yeah, everybody did.
Then I thought, I'm like, what can I say? The guy's got talent. The guy's making these love songs and the shit sounds good. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember on a mixtape, 50 Cent imitated Ja Rule and made it like the Cookie Monster's greatest hits. And he, did you remember that one?
I do.
And then you're like, that's a good point. This dude does sell out the Cookie Monster. After that, like, 50 Cent, like, I like to pride myself in being someone that is not easily influenced. Mind you, I wasn't like a huge Ja Rule fan,
mm-hmm.
but after 50 Cent was finished with him, I couldn't look at him.
Yeah, nobody took him seriously after that.
I couldn't look at the guy. Like, it's like somebody that, you know, somebody that, a woman that you respect, and all of a sudden you find out she's a whore, and you just can't look at her because all of a sudden she's just a whore to you, right? That was Ja Rule. Like, I couldn't look at the guy, and it was unbelievable. Like, the phenomenon. Ja Rule could literally, if you want to take any hit of that day and age, you know, any musical combination, beat, lyrics, hook, everything, and make it amazing, take the best thing out other than 50 Cent, give it to Ja Rule, no one would have liked it. You just couldn't. You couldn't like him. You no. couldn't like Ja Rule. It just 50 Cent completely took his credibility away, man.
And not even that you couldn't like it, you almost felt like you weren't allowed to like Ja Rule after. That's how
he
you made you
want
feel.
To. He, yeah. Exactly. He just didn't want to. Imagine telling someone you like Ja Rule back then. Man, what would you look like telling somebody I'm listening to Ja Rule in my CD Walkman?
who do you got at number three?
Three, I got What Up Gangster.
Ooh, okay.
I got What Up Gangster. I thought about putting that higher,
mm-hmm.
but the two songs I have above that, to me personally, resounded more at the time.
Okay.
Mind you, I'll tell you, What Up Gangster has more club appeal these days than one of the ones that I have before this. Because okay. What Up Gangster, you hear it now in the club. And
yeah, people go
you're
crazy.
Rocking out to that.
People go crazy. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I mean, I'm surprised that he wasn't thinking about that and in the club as a single.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, that song there has commercial appeal and still has, you know, the authenticity of a quality hood song. I'm surprised he wasn't thinking about that as one of his as a single. I know it's a song that led, you know, that introed the album. But to me, like, again, when I touch on my other two, you'll understand why I had to put them before this. But
okay.
this is easily interchangeable.
No, of course.
With the number two. Like, this one is, that song to me was dope, man. And it was a perfect intro to the album.
Oh, my God.
Like, when you heard that song, you're like, this is what I got to look at. This is what I'm supposed to expect from this album.
I know. Perfect intro. Perfect first song. Perfect first song. I actually had, for number three, for mine, I actually had Many Men.
Wow.
Yeah, it interchanges with me because, trust me, I flipped on this list a few times, but I ended up settling for Many Men because that was one of my favorite songs in the album, I remember, and the hook on that track was just, it was everything, man. Many men wish death upon me, blood in my dog and I can't see. Like, just the whole... the whole way he did it was just, it was nursery rhyme. It was, I don't know. It was sing-songy, catchy, but like, it just went hard too. You know what I mean? Like, it just, everything just matched up perfect. The production of it was dope. Just everything, it matched up. And then he touches on the whole thing of, you know, like him, you know, like, he touches on the whole fact that he got shot and the guy that, you know, like that shot him got his at the end. And, you know, like basically he was on a path of destiny because, you know, he got shot like he got shot. But, you know, like he's still alive making music and this guy's in the ground. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So it's like he touches on that whole experience. And let me ask you a question. Like, how on a miracle scale on 1 to 10, how high is 50 Cent's story on the miracle scale? Because like think about it like this. This kid comes from the hood selling drugs, whatever, you know, everything else. He turns himself into a rapper. He signs to a label deal with Columbia, which is like, you know, like one out of like a million people get a chance to do that. The first single he drops, you know, as we mentioned, he talks about robbing all the biggest rappers and people in the industry. He gets enough buzz that an album is in the works. He's working with Trackmasters. The guy gets shot 9 times by his enemies. He survives. If that's not enough, he gets dropped by the record label on top of everything else. He rehabs himself back for the next year to 2 years, comes back looking like a WWE wrestler. He forms an amazing team, creates a major buzz on the street again without the help of radio or a record label. He goes one-on-one basically with the biggest entity in music the hottest entity in music at the time, takes them down. You know, on top of that, this guy's selling out mixtapes. This guy's selling out concerts. and then on top of that, he clicks up with the biggest entities in music, all within 3 years of being left for dead. And so within 3 years of being left for dead, Sean, this guy's the biggest rapper in music. Seriously, what the fuck?
When you put it like that, all conventional wisdom tells you that every point you brought up should not have happened.
No.
Like every single one. He went against the odds for every point. And for 50 Cent to have accomplished that under, you know, those circumstances, there's a million rappers that haven't under those very same circumstances.
That never came close.
It's that level of, one, quality of music, two, confidence, three, he just had that thing about him. He was captivating, man. He just had that thing about him. Even like, you know, people like Ja Rule and people that hate him, like, look at this dude making it seem like it's cool to get shot. Since when do you respect the guy that gets shot, not the shooter? Something about him just made it so cool to get shot. I don't know. It's like all of a sudden people start talking about how many times they were shot. You know what I mean? Anybody like, yeah, I got shot once, and I got shot 3 times. Like, he got shot 3 times? Like,
yeah, remember that? Like, that was like a weird thing, and people started, like, it was almost like a battle of, like your battle scars. Like, yeah, I got shot 4 times. Now when it rains, you know, I know when it's going to rain because my bones hurt. You're like, what? Like, where's hip-hop going right now?
Exactly, man. Like, 50 Cent made it cool. I got shot 9 times. Like, it just made it so cool to, like, man, this dude really, like you said, got shot 9 times, left for dead, came back, and then now look at him. Now look at the dude. Got to walk around with a bulletproof vest to protect himself, but takes off the vest and looks like Hercules. You know what I mean? And all that while he's capsizing the biggest thing in music. It was just the perfect storm, man.
It really was.
It was the perfect storm. And the thing is, so many people afterward tried to recreate that. But it just worked for him. Everything, all the parts of the puzzle fit perfectly for him. After that, you know how many artists came through? Yo, I've been shot. And we're like, yeah, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, same thing. Come out, looking ripped, take your shirt off. Nah, whatever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it just worked out. All of the things just aligned. All the stars aligned perfectly for 50 at that time.
And on top of that, like, now it's at a point, like, you look at his career now. Do you even associate him with being shot 9 times? You don't even think about that anymore.
I completely forget about it. I don't think about it at all.
Yeah, you don't even think about it. Like, the only reason why I think about it now is because, I mean, you're looking at the album cover, got a bullet going through a window, and, you know, so that was synonymous with, obviously, his past that he was going through at that point in time. But, like, now you don't even think, you just think of 50 Cent as, like, a mogul. you don't even think about this stuff anymore.
It's true.
You know,
so well, like, one thing about 50, though, I'll say at this present time, one thing about 50 is he's really got to mature, step up his wardrobe and mature a bit, man. 50 dresses is a little too young, man. You see Jay, you see Puff, you see, you know, other artists. They've as they get older, they mature. 50 Cent's still walking around with, like, do-rags and baseball caps. You know what I mean? And they're baggy jeans. You got to step it up a little bit. He's a little caught up. He's a little trapped in time with that, man.
So you're saying him and Allen Iverson are in the VIP section of that topic?
For real, man. It's time to get rid of the Anichi jeans. You know what I mean?
the iceberg, the Snoopy sweaters, and Teddy.
Yeah, man. It's time to retire those.
All right. So who do you got at number two?
Number two. That's where I had to put patiently waited.
Okay. I can't argue with that.
Yeah, I had to put that in. Just that whole track, the way the song comes in, the way the beat comes in, I still love that beat. You know, that way that beat comes in, like we said before, 50's first verse, then you got M on it. You had that M cosign, and M came, and he came correct on that track. Then 50, you know, he finished the song off with not as lyrical a verse, but still some quotable parts of the, you know, mm-hmm. some parts that you can quote. And I don't know, that song to me, man, that song was really dope, man.
No, like I said, again, I can't argue with that. My number two was What Up Gangsta. I had that at number two.
I can respect that.
And you know what? Sure. And here's, I'll tell you a little story. So, you know, after that album came out a few months later, you know, he came to Toronto. He was actually doing a tour with Jay-Z. It was a 50 Cent and Jay-Z concert. It was at the Molson Amphitheater, which is now called Budweiser Stage. And okay. That was like, at that time, Sean, that was like you were basically like a fool if you didn't get this ticket. Everybody went to that concert. And, okay. I'll tell the quick joke, because I remember 50 Cent came out first and he put on a dope performance, right?
And I don't even remember that. 50 Cent and Hov.
Yeah, they toured together. That was 50 Cent's first major tour. Okay. So I remember. Shout out to my man Norris, because he hooked us up with the tickets the time he was at working for House of Blues. So, you know, we really got good seats, man. So Norris, thank you if you're listening. Thank you for those tickets 15 years later. But honestly, like, yeah, that concert was crazy, man, because I remember it was so packed for that like 50s part. But then I remember when Jay-Z came on, Sean, it was like, I swear, Sean, it was like I had to stand on my seat because people were in the aisles. Like, wow. I don't know where people came from. Like, it was when I say it was packed for 50, it was packed. But like Hov's part was like super packed. But going into this song, right, like how 50 Cent came on stage, right? They had a like a mock skyscraper scene from New York City. So they basically had a mock like portion of New York City. Like they had fake buildings and fake skyscrapers with the Empire State Building, right? And while they're doing that, they're playing Frank Sinatra's My Way. New York, New York. So they're playing Frank Sinatra's New York, New York. And they're playing the whole song while it comes on. And then at the end, while it's cresting, where he's like, you know, getting to the climax where Frank Sinatra is like, you know, such and such, New York, New York. Like at that part at the end, 50 Cent pops up at the top of the Empire State Building, which is like, Sean, it's probably like almost like 20 feet high from the top of the stage. So he pops up from the top of the Empire State Building. Everybody's losing their shit. Wow. Everybody's going crazy. And then this guy jumps off the top of the friggin' tower, lands on like, I guess they had a mat on the floor, obviously. So he lands on this mat. He just rolls off the mat. First song, boom, 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 and everybody lost their minds. Like every time I think of that song, I think of that concert. Like that was crazy. That was like the best intro for a concert. One of the best intros for a concert I ever seen. It was crazy.
Actually, it's all right. I gotta say, man, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, that was it was insane. Like that part, like everybody just like, trust me, everybody lost. Even if you weren't a 50 Cent fan, just that whole production, just to lead up just to that song, was just you were hooked for the rest of the show. Like it was crazy. Cause remember that at that time, they not only did they do the concert, remember they had their own shoes. Like 50 Cent had the G-Unit Reebok sneakers. So I think it was like there was a tour slash like Reebok tour or something. So Jay-Z had his S. Dot Carters, and remember, and 50 Cent had his G-Unit sneakers. So that was that whole thing that was going on. So
okay, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, like I said, man, every time I think of What Up Gangsta, I think of that track. But as you said before, as you touched on, it was a perfect lead track for an album. Like, it was the perfect song because it made you prepare for everything else that was coming after that. Yeah. Sorry, anything else you want to add?
I mean, honestly speaking, I said everything I had to say about that track before, but I was battling putting that, my number two versus number three with Patiently Waiting, just because that song, man, like I said, like Patiently Waiting to me, I like the combination of the beat and the lyrics and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
I like it better that way. But as far as re-listenability, I'll give it to What Up Gangsta.
Mm-hmm.
Like Patiently Waiting, you're not going to sit there like, I gotta listen to this song again. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, What Up Gangsta, man, like as far as sonically, you know, just as far as a song, I'm not mad at that for number two. I'm not mad at that at all.
That one was fire. All right, so number one. Well, I got in the club. Who you got?
Out of principle, it has to be in the club.
Of course, yeah. But I want to hear your reason.
Well, here's the thing. I probably listened to every song I listed prior or after in the club. I'll listen to those before I listen in the club.
Yeah.
Right now. Like, okay. If In the Club comes on, I don't really want to necessarily hear it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But it just had such a profound impact at the time. And the video and the song itself pretty much set the stage and catapulted the album to the heights that it ended up being on. And because of that alone, as the lead single and the song that would, and you know, end up leading an album that would send sell, how much did it end up selling? Did it end
12,
up selling
12 like million? Million? 12 yeah, million?
Like, and all on the back of that song, for that reason alone, I have to give it number one, especially because it's a quality song. Like sometimes, you know, you'll be like, okay, I know that, you know, a certain track, you know, Nelly's Country Grammar or whatever the hell, you know, blowing up, but I never dug it that much. Well, I don't think it's quality of the song as the numbers might tell you.
But let's add that video was fire though. But go on.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. but when you think about like In the Club, man, like the beat, the hook, man, like the song itself is if you break it down, was a masterpiece, man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
It really was.
It was and the beat itself, without 50's song attached to it, isn't the most fire beat in the world. You know what I mean? But the beat itself, with what he did to it, combination, man, that song's out of there.
You know what? I'll only disagree in the sense where I think the beat is epic. Like, the beat makes you feel like, the beat gives you like that blockbuster feel. You know what I mean? Like kind of like how how the Black Panther's coming out, and every time you watch the trailer, it's like you feel like it's a moment or a movement that's about to happen. Like that's kind of like the feel that In the Club gives you to me. You know what I mean?
Okay,
like,
actually, I agree with you. Let me rephrase that. Not that, but I'll say I don't think it's a beat that just anybody could have rocked.
Right. That was made specifically for him.
Yeah, like if you give that beat to Jay-Z, nothing comes of that. If you give that beat to Eminem, nothing comes of that. It was just something about that beat, he was able to put something together that worked perfectly for that. Because it's a dope beat, but there's a lot of dope beats that sonically are amazing, but they're difficult to put a quality song together.
Right.
On, you know what I mean? But I think he managed, like you said, it was like it was made for him, man.
And you know what's funny, because, you know, I got my Spotify, so, you know, it has like the read the lyrics by the Rap Genius, like every, you know, it has that thing where it tells the story every time you listen to the song play, so you can kind of read along with it. But one of the parts that they say in there was that they said that the song was actually originally made for you know, remember Bizarre? Was it either Bizarre or Proof from D12?
Oh, my goodness.
It was made, the song was actually their beat, but they had no idea what to do with it.
Goodness.
And you're like, a part of you is like, man, thank God.
God bless. Yeah.
Like, thank God.
When Bizarre came out with that song, I never would have heard it. We would never ever say,
nope.
Hey, remember that Bizarre beat? Nah, that never would happen.
Nope. That would have just came and went. But you're absolutely right. Like, it's funny that hype going into, like, by the time that album was coming out, right? And then the hype that was coming along with that first track, like, that first track was so important to Nail. Like, I hate to refer back to Cannabis, but when Cannabis was coming out with his first single, like, the hype for that first single was like, it was everything. So it's like he had to nail it. You know what I mean? And it's like, and Cannabis, where Cannabis failed, 50 shined.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Sure. And I mean, that's the same thing with DMX. When DMX came out with Get At Me, Dog, like, that was it. Like, you knew. Like, you just knew. You know what I mean? Like, it was a wrap right there. And I think In the Club was kind of the same thing. Like, it's like there was so much hype around that first single, or what the first single was going to be. It was at the point of like ridiculousness, but it exceeded the hype. It exceeded the hype, man. It really did. And
it is true. And
I'll say this much, man. I'll give you another quick story. I'm traveling with my mom and my aunt coming to Montreal, actually, right? It's probably like a few months later. And the song comes on the radio, and it's so funny hearing your parents who have no association with hip hop whatsoever. Like, we're going to be different from our parents because you have a 16-year-old son. You guys probably listen to some of the same music, right? So, but we're not going to have, like, our parents, we're not going to have that same kind of musical affiliation unless we're talking about, like, you know, like the 70s and 80s stuff that they were listening to that we, you know, that we loved. They had, my parents and my mom and, well, my aunt, both of them hardcore Christians, right? And the song comes on the radio, and the conversation, I'm listening to the conversation of the two of them while I'm driving, is, who is this again? Oh, it's that boy. It's what's his name? The one that gets shot up. What's his name? 50 Cent. Yeah, that's 50 Cent. Oh, what? That's the birthday song, you know. That's the birthday song. Yeah. That's the birthday song. Yeah, man. And then they're going on and on, like, having this full discussion there. Well, yeah, he gets shot 9 times, but then, you know, he survived, and, you know, now he's doing stuff. And I'm like, yo, am I in the freaking Twilight Zone? What the hell is going on here? You know,
you've made it. When?
What? Yo, Sean, you know you made it when your elderly mom and auntie is having a full-length conversation about 50 Cent, the gangster rapper.
Most definitely, man. That must have been the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, it was super surreal, you know what I mean? So at that moment, I knew, I was like, okay, like, this guy is basically, the only way he screws this up is he has to screw this up now in terms of him being famous and wealthy, you know, from after that song dropped. So it's like, there's a before 50 where the mixtapes and all that stuff, but then that song was like everything else that led, you know, to the rest of his life. You know what I mean? Like, that, that song is going to make, like, his kids will still be able to eat off that song when they're like old. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure, man.
50 Cent, Dr. Dre and them, they nailed this song. Like, it was, they had to stick the landing, man. Like, you know, when those gymnasts, like, they had to stick the landing, and they landed perfectly on the corner of the mat. They did it perfect.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
All right, so to wrap up now, here's a question I'm going to ask you here. So I would say that this album is, as far as this century goes, from, you know, the year 2000 on, this is a classic album. It's one of the best hip-hop albums of this century, you know, so 18 years. So would you rank this in the top five of your list? Now, before you answer the question, right, I'm going to read you the list that I put together, correct me if I'm missing some or what have you, right? But you have to choose five. You don't have to rank them, but you have to choose five. And does Get Rich or Die Trying fall into this five of your top five albums from the year 2000 on? So I'll read you the list that I put together here. So Jay-Z's The Blueprint. Nas was Stillmatic. Get Rich or Die Trying, obviously. The documentary with The Game. Outkast, Speaker Box, The Love Below. College Dropout with Kanye. Common's comeback album, B. Graduation from Kanye, which we spoke about this past summer. Mm-hmm. Young Jeezy's Let's Get It, Thug Motivation 101. T.I.'s King album that had the What You Know About That. What You Know About, like, that album was, I bumped that album like crazy for that time that it was out. The Carter 3, Wheezy, Lil Wayne.
Carter 3 over Carter 4?
Well, Carter 3 was the one that was the Super Smash one.
What, wasn't Carter 4 a Millie? Wasn't that on the Carter 4?
No, that was Carter 3.
Oh, okay. I thought it was
4. Yeah, no, that was a Carter 3. Nothing Was the Same, which is Drake. Good Kid, Mad City, Kendrick Lamar. Do We Dare Put Damn in that category? Kendrick Lamar, last year's top album.
Man, this is really tough.
It's tough, right? And then my other question is, do we consider So Far Gone an album or a mixtape? I'm going to say it's a mixtape just because it was technically a mixtape, but that was treated like an album. Again, which is the influence of how 50 Cent changed the mixtape game, where this So Far Gone was the mixtape, the body of work that made Drake a superstar. Yeah. So I don't know if you want to put that one in the category or not. I'll leave that one up to you. I'm going to take him out of that because it's a mixtape, technically it's a mixtape. But with that said, what would be your top five out of that list? And if I'm missing an album, correct me.
I'm really not good at top fives, man. Because afterward, I'm like, oh, man. Like, I'll just be perusing through albums like, oh, that was a good album. I forgot to add. But if I'm to wing it,
If you have to choose.
Ah, it's tough.
This is off the cuff. So,
off the cuff, I'll say Get Rich or Die Trying is definitely one of the top five. And I can't rank in order. I'm not.
You know what?
That granular.
You know what? Let's do this another way. Because I'm not asking you to rank. I just want you to pick your top five. But let's do it together because we're doing this off the cuff and this. It's kind of hard to put this together looking at it. I'm looking at this list now, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to forget some stuff. So do we just default Blueprint and Stillmatic on this list as one and two in this list? Not ranking, but just two albums on the top five?
I can't, to be quite honest with you, because I think if we're to be honest with ourselves, Stillmatic was on Nas's way down.
How dare you, Sean?
I think.
How fucking dare you?
Blueprint, I guess I'll put that, even though that's not one of Jay's, that's not his best album, but yeah, it's tough.
Well, again, this is not just their best album. This is just from the year 2000 going forward.
Yeah, so I guess I would put Blueprint on there.
How dare you don't put Stillmatic on this list?
Yeah, I guess I put Blueprint. You know, I've never been the biggest Nas fan.
You son of a...
Get Rich or Die Trying, I think you'd have to put that there. Mm-hmm. Documentary, nah. Game, I don't know. Something About The Game, I just can't put him up there.
That album was fire, though, Sean.
It was. It was fire, but... Speaker Box, The Love Below. Well, other than Hey Ya, I gotta say, I wasn't really...
Yeah, I know Outkast isn't your speed, personally. I know. Yeah. We've had many conversations about them. We think differently, because I love Outkast, but go on.
The college Dropout, yeah, I think you gotta put that on there.
All right.
Because College Dropout, like, there's certain albums that ended up changing the path of music, right? Mm-hmm. Like The College Dropout.
Well, you can say Graduation, too.
Yeah, but I won't give Kanye too much on the top five. It's tough. Thug Motivation and T.I., Thug Motivation was a serious album, man.
Yeah, it really was, though.
It was a serious, serious album.
And so was King. King was, I don't care what anybody says, King was fire.
And Carter III, I don't think I could come up with a top five, Calvin. all of these, I have a good argument why all of these should be in the top five. Like, yeah, I don't know, man. I think your list is, it causes, there's too much room for arguments as to why all of these should be top five.
This, honestly, looking at this list should probably be its own podcast.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. Honestly, it really should. Like, looking at this now, I'm like, this could actually, I think we should actually make this a podcast somewhere maybe later in the year or something. Like,
yeah, seriously.
Like, honestly, because I'm looking at this list now and I'm like, yeah. This is a tough list, man, to choose from.
Yeah, because all these albums essentially mapped out the culture from 2000 and beyond.
Yeah.
You know, like, most of what you listen to now are either a result of these directly, like Drake and, like, you know, Kendrick and whoever else that are still relevant today because of these albums.
Right.
Or there are young artists that are rapping today because of this. Like, Carter III, you know how many rappers today, Lil Wayne couldn't Darth Vader and say, "I'm your father"?
I know. So true.
So many of these little kids today are basically spawns of Lil Wayne, man.
Yeah. I agree. I like I said, this needs to be its own podcast in itself. I think we'll shelve that part just because this needs to be its own podcast. Like, I'm going to keep this conversation on the podcast, of course, but this needs to be its own podcast looking back. Like, how do you rank this? And this will be a heavy argument, honestly.
Because
me and you, I'll tell you right now, me and you will be fist fighting for Stillmatic. I'll tell you that right now, Sean. Fist fighting. Bring a pipe because we fighting for Stillmatic. I'll tell you that right now.
I don't know, man. I don't know. If within that fight you're going to embody Nas's energy, then it's going to be an easy fight.
How dare you, son?
You're going to be a real lethargic fighter.
But honestly, though, yeah, I mean, Get Rich or Die Trying, obviously, is like, it's super influential on this century, basically, when you look back on it now. But, it's tough. I mean, if I do a very quick, rough one right now, I'd probably put Blueprint, Stillmatic, Get Rich or Die Trying. Oh, God. Yeah, it's tough. I'd say the Carter III, College Dropout.
There's not enough Atlanta in there, man. Atlanta was the wave.
I know.
Thug Motivation. Because
where do you put Thug Motivation in the King? I know, in the King album.
You gotta put them there because Atlanta eclipsed the East in the 20th century, the 21st century.
It really did. Yeah. So, let's come back to this list.
Yeah, man.
Let's come back to this list. But with that said, you know, Get Rich or Die Trying, just to wrap this up, was one of the greatest albums of the 21st century, man. Like, you think back on it, it's the impact of it and of everything that 50 did leading up to this has ripple effects on the music industry to this day.
Yeah, man.
You know, it helped to change music. It really did. Like, it really helped to change just how people look at numbers, how people treat their mixtapes. People put serious thought into their mixtapes now. Like, they're like, mixtapes are basically like albums now.
Yeah.
You know, like,
exactly.
You can eat off mixtapes basically right now, like, and live a very, very comfortable life.
Yeah, you put out a mixtape and then you just tour.
Yeah. Yeah, you could tour off the mixtape and be straight. Yeah, like I said, it's super influential, man, on this album, like 100%. Like, I don't think anybody can discredit it. And it's like I said, I want to see what other albums come forward from this. I know, like, the way the game is at now, it's in a bit of a weird space, but I feel like it's, you know, there's some healthy competition between Drake and Kendrick, and I know Migos is like, they're the new wave, but like, I'm liking some of the stuff they're putting out, and You're starting to see more lyricism start to come back a little bit, and so I want to see where it's gonna go, and I want to see who's the next hard artist to come out and kind of like put a shift in the game again. I think Meek Mill kind of had a chance, but then, yeah, he wasn't on that level though. Like he came back, he came out nice too. You know, he did some big stuff, but it wasn't on the 50 Cent level.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where that's gonna go too. Because to be honest with you, this game is one completely left field to me. I can't call it between rappers with the word Xanax in their name and multicolored hair and multicolored fronts and man, I don't know. I think if you're looking for someone to take the game that you're gonna appreciate, Calvin, you may have to travel back in time. I'm not sure that that's going to happen anytime in the near future.
But. Well, I mean, doesn't Enterprise rent out DeLoreans?
Hopefully. I don't know. So that must be... I hate to see the daily rate on that. Because anything that's coming out now, man, I don't know. I'm not sure if it's going to have that same level of innovation and creativity that 50 Cent... and album and everything leading up to it, like you said, had. I don't know. I don't see that anymore, man. But, hey, maybe someone will surprise us. Who knows, man?
Yeah, that's how it usually happens. Just when we think it's, we think it's going one direction, it always shoots off another way, you know? So let's see what happens. But on that note, listen, Sean, thank you once again for coming on this podcast and discussing the Get Rich or Die Trying, man. Like, it's something that, I mean, if I could tell my 20-something-year-old self that I'll be having my own podcast show. I probably would have known what the hell a podcast was back then. But but I mean, either way, if I was on some sort of a media platform and having to discuss albums in this kind of way, like, you know, we definitely knew even back then, if there was something like a platform like this to be had, this album would be discussed.
Yeah, definitely, man. Thanks for having me, man. I mean, it was definitely, I definitely appreciate being able to discuss such an epic time in music that we, you know, that we love and adore, and discuss how it changed it before it plummeted. So it's great, man.
No, but much appreciated, brother. So we'll talk.
Definitely, man.
All right. Thank you all for tuning in to the Av Podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. Special shout out once again goes out to Sean Adonis. Much appreciated, brother, for coming on and sharing your thoughts on one of the classic hip hop albums of the 21st century. Man, listen, we all forget now, but like, man, that album was a monster. It's cool being able to review and discuss this album outside of the fact that it makes me feel very old, of course. You realize the impact that it still has in some ways on hip hop, even after this album was released 15 years ago, for better and for worse. But one thing's for sure, it definitely has to be respected. And also we will revisit the list of classic albums in the 21st century, maybe even rank them. I'm going to spend some time with it and drop that episode later this year for sure. Don't know when yet, but sometime this year for sure, you'll definitely see that episode come through. In the meanwhile, you can catch all the latest South Shore Ave episodes wherever you listen to the podcast. You can listen to the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher. And make sure you subscribe to that and to check out the Foundation website and to listen to my entire catalog of podcast shows. Make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. For Sean Adonis, this is Cal C. And you've just tuned in to the Av Podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. Until the next podcast, folks, peace.